The reality for many of you is that investment properties where you live have become absolutely unaffordable. The good news is that there are many cities with affordable properties and many of those under 100K. If you're someone who's ready to buy your first out-of-state property in the next 4 months, then I encourage you to check out my free training that'll break down the process and show you exactly what it takes to invest out of state. I purchased properties out of state and it's changed my life. The same is possible for you. You simply need the right information. My free training will help you take that next step towards buying your first out-of-state property. You can watch the training right now at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode. Again, you can find it at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode.
Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second?
Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue, and the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors.
The reality for a lot of you is that investment properties where you live have become absolutely unaffordable. Here's the good thing though. Around the country, there are so many cities with affordable investment properties, some even under 100,000, so there's a lot of opportunity out there. On September 20th, I'm starting a 4-week virtual intensive workshop that'll show you how to buy your first out-of-state property. So we're gonna go over everything from creatively financing that first property, how to build your team that you can trust, how to find and analyze properties, and how to find the right location, and so much more. You deserve to build wealth for your family. You deserve to invest in real estate. It's simply a matter of getting the right information. So I want to see you there. If you're interested, go to outofstatemoney.com/workshop or click the link in the description of this episode. I'll see you there.
Welcome back to the Black Real Estate Dialogue Investor Spotlight featuring episode 170 with Brandon Rule, the entrepreneur and real estate developer. In this particular spotlight, Brandon's going to talk about what it's like to work with local real estate as a real estate developer. So without any further ado, let's get into it. The Black Real Estate Dialogue Investor Spotlight, episode 170. Let's go.
I think that's the power of real estate. You know, a lot of people look at investors and developers like these greedy, money-hungry people. I'm sure some are, but you know, there's people like you, there's people out there who, I mean, obviously you're in business to make money, but you know, you're literally transforming lives. Like people can live with dignity, you know, whereas before it was probably run down for shacks and stuff like that. So I think that's something important for people to think about, as you know, especially if they want to get into this space.
Couldn't agree more, man. And in this building, there was zero displacement. It was an old industrial building that was only like 25 or 30% used.
Wow.
Tore that down. They relocated their facility. And then we built new quality apartments that were very much so like market rate housing. It's just we have an affordability level. Now, to the point that you just made about making money, yes, we all want to make money. This deal, as sexy as it sounds, was a $12.5 million deal. And when I closed on this deal, late 2018, pretty much 9 years into my development journey, I received a $6,000 check. So as much as it looks sexy, I had to forego a lot in order to get that done, just so the gentleman can live there. And a huge part of that was the income I made. My paid developer fee on that deal was $30,000 total. I have a deferred fee that may come, you know, at a significantly later date. But how many people would do 9 years worth of work and only make $30,000? Well, really six. I didn't make the other 24 until another 2 years after that. So that's a question that, you know, I hope the audience asks themselves when they're like, oh, yeah, I want to do this big, fun development stuff. That's hopefully a one-off for anyone that's watching this and you're trying to get into the space. But it is a reality and something you got to be aware of when you get into it.
Yeah, definitely. So I want to talk about that a little bit more because to your point, you know, sometimes you got to start a little bit smaller as far as the money you're taking in just so you can gain the experience to kind of, I mean, you've gone on to do amazing things since then. Was it difficult for you to, you know, at the point when you realize I'm not really going to get much out of this, was it difficult for you to proceed or to feel like, you know, in the long term, you can make it profitable and continue to grow?
For that deal, I'd say it was difficult to swallow the reality that was setting in, right? when I first was putting my numbers together, it was like a $10 million deal. Thinking my developer fee was going to be $1.2 million. I thought that I would have a partner that would have a minority stake in that. And I'm going to be a millionaire. You know, that was the original thought. But over the course of the next three and a half years, when I got the deal done, reality set in, right? So I think, yes, over that period of time from 2016 to 19, let's just say, 2015 to 19, there were some tough moments of accepting the reality of the few hundred thousand or million dollars that I thought I would make is now going to be pretty much nothing. I mean, yeah, literally $6,000, and we get paid less as developers, mm-hmm. right? Like, if at all at times. And it was tough. But what I knew with my future deals, I wouldn't do the same things that I did here. Mm-hmm. I also knew that the resilience and character that I was building by going through that process was going to help me well beyond that period of time. And frankly, I was coming from little to nothing from a monetary perspective anyway. So it's like, okay, I went from nothing to nothing. What's the difference? Like, at least I gained the knowledge and I'm able to use that to catapult and springboard into other things later. So it was difficult during the moment, but I always had my eyes set on the bigger picture. So it never really fazed me too much.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad you explained that because, you know, I appreciate the transparency because I want people to know, like, you can't give up, right? Like, no. You can't give up on the first deal if it doesn't go as planned. You got to keep going, you know, with the compound interest, right? Like, you just you keep building, keep getting better, taking the lessons, and I mean, who knows what could happen?
Absolutely. Yeah, you can't. I think one of the things that I'll add to that statement of not giving up is just you also know when to give up. Because OG of mine, mentor, Egbert Perry, one of the best OG mentor of mine, Egbert Perry, he tells me a couple of things. One is one of the best deals you can ever do is the one you didn't. Mm-hmm. So that's a real thing. Like, every deal isn't a slam dunk deal. And another thing is he says you can die from indigestion. So as much as I'm looking at, like, potential opportunities and I can do this and I can do that and I can do this and, yes, I'm in articles and interviews like this and papers and I get a lot of notoriety and a lot of opportunity, the reality is I can't do it all, you know, because literally you can die of indigestion when you're trying to eat all of this and your body doesn't process it all. You're killing yourself, quite literally. So from a figurative perspective on the business side, I think there's two ends of the spectrum.
Yeah.
One on the front end where it's like, hey, yes, I'm trying and I should not give up. You have to start to learn when the giving up for that specific deal should happen.
Yeah.
And then on the other side where it's like you have so many things going on, you should also know when to turn off. So not give up, but turn off certain things.
Yeah.
And they said, don't fall in love with a deal. Never give up on the dream.
Yeah.
Even if you have to take a different alternative route on the process.
Definitely, definitely. So let's talk about low income tax credits. I don't think we've had anybody on the show dive into that at all. So could you explain a bit about just how that works and how it can be advantageous for developers?
Yeah, so it's Section 42 of the IRS code is what it is. Mm-hmm. And it is low income housing tax credit. So what they did in the, you know, 30s, HUD had these 100% affordable, really low income projects. We know them as projects today, right?
Right.
As they were building them, they concentrated 200, 300, 500,000 people into these very small clusters, frankly. There had been extremely low income targets. So whenever you're in that HUD, Section 8, et cetera, is 30% AMI or lower. Mm-hmm. And when you concentrate all of those people together, but any concentration of people together that are impoverished or in poverty, you will get a ghetto. It just so happened to, like, intentionally, you know, structure those around Black people across the country. But that aside, just explaining Section 8 and what was the projects, Cabrini Green, Berry Farms, Bowen Homes, depending on where you are in the country, that is not what the Section 42 is. It completely changed that thought process of extremely low income individuals being concentrated. Mm-hmm. What Section 42 is a new way to develop housing. And what they do is say, hey, let's create a tax credit. So the federal government says each state has X amount of population. We're going to allocate this pie of tax credits based upon your population.
Gotcha.
So each state gets their percentage in a pro rata basis. And then the state says, okay, we're going to create a qualified allocation plan, which is a very specific set of rules that govern their tax credit program.
Right.
And a state may say, hey, we're focused on veterans, or we're focused on people with disabilities, or we're focused on homelessness. Another state may say, we're focused on rural communities.
Yeah.
It depends on what their priorities are, but typically every 2 years they create a new qualified allocation plan. Within that, you typically see a scoring sheet that'll tell you pretty much what the priorities of that state is, right? Because they're going to score their priorities to be a little higher.
Right.
And developers have the opportunity to go in, identify sites, whether it be publicly owned land or private owned land, and submit to the states that have these low-income housing tax credits.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue. And be sure to leave us 5 stars and a review on your favorite podcast listening platform. Until next time.
A lot of smart people don't feel smart about their money. We have so many questions. Is a prenup a good way to start a marriage? Can I afford my dream home? And how do I leave a legacy for my children? Morgan Stanley has a podcast to help. On What Should I Do With My Money? You can listen in on real people asking the same questions you have and getting helpful answers from experienced financial advisors. Find and follow What Should I Do With My Money to get the answers you need to feel smart about your money.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.